Damien, welcome to the show. We're testing microphone levels.
Oh boy, we're testing? Yeah, this is going to be fun.
Welcome to the Memories of a Moonbird podcast, exploring life one story at a time. Hello, friends. Today on the show, he's a very funny and talented guy, and for almost 20 years, he's been cracking us up on TV shows and commercials with his sarcastic and dry wit. He plays a dad a lot, but he's also one in real life, and so he donned his producer hat and created a kids show on Amazon called Silly Billy Toys. And the best part, he gets to work on the show with his daughter. Today we're going to talk about life, entertainment, and the glory of Ben & Jerry's ice cream, which just may be a vital component in the meaning of life. Let's find out. Please welcome my friend, the hilarious Damien Cissier. Damien, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Daniel.
My pleasure.
Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. Let's jump right in and have you tell everybody where you're from.
I grew up in Middlebury, Vermont,
nice.
Which is a very picturesque New England upbringing. Town of, at the time, probably about 3,000 or 4,000 people.
Oh, I was going to say 3 or 4 people.
Well, yeah. At one point, it was 3 or 4. That was before my time.
What was life like growing up in Big VT?
Yeah, it was great. It was very friendly. You have this New England friendliness, which even being out here in California 20 plus years now, I really do miss. There were just great opportunities to be outside. And even though it was really cold half the year, as Vermonters, we still kind of, you know, sucked it up and put on our, you know, cold weather clothes and went skiing or tobogganing,
sledding
and stuff. Yeah, and it was really, really fun.
I think the most important question I have for you is, have you been to the Ben & Jerry's factory in Vermont?
You know, it's state law. You're required to go there once a year. If anyone visits from out of state, you have to take them to the factory and get free samples.
Oh, man, it was so great. I went there many years ago when I lived in Boston.
Yeah.
And I didn't know they gave free samples, and I loved the tour, and then I really loved the free samples and thought, this is the greatest thing in the world, free ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
How does it get much better than this?
Totally, yeah. And what was cool is, you know, Ben & Jerry's was still really blowing up when I was a kid there. So, you know, maybe once or twice a year, they come out with a new flavor. So one year it was Chunky Monkey. Remember that flavor?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that just, like, you couldn't keep it in the stores. And then Cherry Garcia, after Jerry Garcia Grateful Dead, of course. That was a really good one. And then, you know, when chocolate chip cookie dough came out. That was a game.
My favorite is actually the, I forget what it's called, but it has the milk chocolate pretzels with peanut butter filling in them.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll have to remember for later
on
the
podcast. I'm sure I ate some of those.
Yeah.
Later on, of course, you know, the rock band Fish is from
fish
Vermont.
Yeah,
so they made
fish
food. And that was really good too. They almost had, like, you know, everything plus the kitchen sink in there, and it was
That's everything but that. That's another great flavor.
Yeah, there you go.
So, when did you decide to be an actor?
I didn't really have a moment where I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna be an actor. Yeah, starting today. For me, it was after college. I came out here because some friends of mine, some fraternity brothers, had said, you got to see the West Coast. It's so much fun. We had been to Northern California to visit friends in earlier years with my folks, but I'd never been to SoCal before.
Mm.
So I moved out, ended up living initially with a high school buddy who was a bartender in Pasadena, and was only there for about a week. And he said, oh, I got some news for you. I'm moving back to Vermont. I was like, no, I just got here. So I ended up finding another buddy, a fraternity brother. I lived with him. And,
what fraternity is this?
I was Sigma Chi at University of Florida. And just living there for about 6 weeks, started meeting other actors, producers, writers, creative types. I've always kind of been drawn to those types of people, you know, like yourself. And
well, thank you.
Pretty soon I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to take an improv class. Oh, people are taking the Groundlings? Yeah, I'll take the class of the Groundlings. And yeah, I'll get some headshots.
Why not?
Yeah, so that was kind of the genesis of it. Is it was really kind of gradual and natural. Somebody had an agent. Oh, you should come read for my agent. Okay. And then I did. And
so the thing that actors come out here and struggle to try and achieve, you just kind of walked into LA and went, I think I'm going to do this.
Yeah, might as well.
It's Thursday, nothing else going on.
Yeah, it beats temping.
Netflix hasn't been invented yet.
Yeah, right. There was no Amazon that we cared about, so.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What drew you to the comedy part of acting? Because you're a very funny guy.
Thank you. I always have loved making people laugh. My dad's very good at it. He really tells a great joke. My mom is kind of more in your face, will make you laugh. And so I think I'm a combination of the two of them. And for me, I just was like, you know, I think it's powerful if you can make a stranger laugh. I've always felt like there's something really cool in that. And maybe as an only child, I enjoyed doing that, like affecting someone's life in a positive way. So yeah, I was drawn towards other comedians, stand-up people. And like I just said, you know, taking class over at the Groundlings. That was really kind of transformative for me.
Now, you've done a lot of really cool stuff in the business. You've had some really fun roles. I personally thought you were hilarious in Angie Tribeca. I know you had that little guest star, co-star.
Oh, yeah. You saw that. That's right.
I did, yeah. Playing Thomas Dolby or whatever it
was called. Right.
What was that show like to work on? Was it fun? It seems like it'd be a great show.
It was really fun. It was really fun, I should say, because everything is so, like, you know, right on the nose in terms of the comedy of it. So, as you recall, my character was a, you know, small scene there. It was not too much, but it was great. You know, everything was just like, you know, we're laughing during rehearsal. And, you know, I got to read the whole script for that episode that I was in. And it's just cracking up. It was really a good environment. Yeah.
I don't know if a lot of people have seen the show or not. I think it was a hilarious show. I know it's not anymore, but
right.
It was a great show. So if you haven't checked out Angie Tribeca, hit it on whatever it's on, wherever it's online, go find it.
Yeah. It was TBS, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
Initially.
It was great. Yeah. We kind of binged all four seasons, you know?
Right. Right.
What was it like to do Fallout? I know you were in the video game. I'm a huge video game person. So was it cool to do voices?
Really cool. Yeah. And that's something I would say, you know, I've been out here 20 years acting almost all 20 of those. That's something that's really kind of come into my world. The latter half is doing this voiceover stuff. And by the way, I love it because, you know, I don't have to shower. I don't have to shave. Kind of like today. Overshare for our listeners. That was really cool because, you know, sometimes you'll get a drawing of your character too. You're like, oh, okay, yeah. And even sometimes they'll make a little bit of the animation from the game so you can see how he or she or it moves.
That's cool.
You know, and kind of like take it on from there. So yeah, doing those video games and doing Fallout, those have been really fun.
Mm. So besides family, because that's the answer everyone says, which is fine and appropriate, but what are you most passionate about in life?
Okay, family. Oh, damn it. You just said don't say that. Okay. Twizzlers. No. What is my real passion?
Wait, as a side note, I have to say, like, Twizzlers are fine. Like, they're not bad.
Yeah.
But there are so many other better candies out there that, like Snickers. I mean, I'm more of a chocolate person. So,
I know you are. Yeah.
So, like, it's like, really? Red liquor? I mean, it's delicious. It's fine. But chocolate? That's a whole other world.
And you are. You're like a layered chocolate guy.
I am. I like very...
You're this coated with this, with nougat.
Yes.
And
pretzels. If it's going to be pure chocolate, it has to be European. Like, I like Belgian chocolate the best.
Yeah, you're a snob because you've traveled so much. So you know you want imports. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, so once you have really good Belgian chocolate, you try to eat something that's like waxy and American and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's different. It is different. It really is.
It is true. I have enough European friends who come here and say the thing they miss are the chocolates that are not as good over here.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. And I don't understand why we don't make them as good, actually. So
yeah,
that's a whole other podcast. So did you travel when you were growing up with your family?
I did. Yeah, we traveled a lot. Every summer, we hopped in the car and drove to New York City. My parents are New Yorkers. My dad grew up in Brooklyn.
My dad as well.
Okay. I didn't remember that about your dad. Yeah. What neighborhood was he from?
That's a good question.
Okay.
I'll have to look that up. 1934 Brooklyn. That's
awesome.
That's the answer.
So my dad is from Bay Ridge. My mom is from Queens Village in Queens. And so all of our family, you know, were from the boroughs, Long Island, or lived in Manhattan. So being a country kid, you know, growing up in Vermont, it was the great fun trip every summer to go to the city.
Sure.
And we stayed with friends who lived kind of on the Upper West Side. And I loved listening to all the noise at night, sirens and people yelling. I just thought that was so cool. You know, there's so much action in Vermont. You would go to bed and you just wouldn't hear anything. Like a car wouldn't pass for 6 hours.
Which is funny because now you and I have both been in LA for 20 years. And now I'm like, can I please live in Vermont where it's quiet?
Damn it. What I wouldn't do for a night of peace and quiet. No choppers.
Was New York the first place you traveled as a kid?
Mm, I'm going to say yes. It's the first place. It's the oldest memory I have of going to another city, you know, outside of going up to Burlington, which was a half an hour away, and our big city in Vermont of 37,000 people. But yeah, I think New York City was it. Occasionally we'd go to Boston, but because we had so many family members and friends in New York, we'd usually hit that up. We'd have places to stay, and that was more fun too.
When I went to the Ben & Jerry's factory, I hiked Stowe. I hiked the mountain there.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun, but I did it during the spring, actually, when there wasn't any snow, you know, and it was a great hike. It's an absolutely beautiful area.
Yeah, Mount Mansfield, right?
I believe so.
Okay.
It's been a little while.
Yeah.
But I just remember it was the big mountain in Stowe, Vermont.
Yeah.
That's cool. What do you like most about traveling?
I like seeing new places. It's a very simple, maybe obvious answer, but I've always been the kind of person who wants to see a new neighborhood, a new city center, new stores, what the people are like, interact with the people. That's what was so fun about New York City is you would, you know, get on the subway and people would have something to say to you, you know, very opinionated. That's that, you know, kind of commonplace New Yorker.
I have no idea what that's like.
So, yeah, it was, so whether we went to Boston or New York or Montreal, Montreal was actually the closest North American city to where I grew up. It was less than 2 hours away. And so my folks went there every December for their anniversary and conveniently left me at home. And but sometimes they would take me up there and I could bring a friend or something. And we just had a blast up there too, because Quebec is a French-speaking province.
Yes, and what's funny is I just absolutely love France.
Yeah.
And I haven't been to Montreal. And a lot of my Canadian friends are like, dude, as much as you love France, you have to come to Montreal. It's amazing. So it's on the list.
Yeah, Quebec does not feel like the rest of Canada at all. And there was a time many years ago where they were thinking of seceding, is that the right word, from the rest of the country.
I remember, yeah.
It never went anywhere, obviously. We all know that. But they take a great deal of pride in their French-Canadian heritage and culture. And the signs all switch to French. And the language, of course, you get to hear. Everyone speaks English, too. But we had so much fun. We used to go up there in high school. And
Speak French?
I took French in high school, but I only became somewhat conversational.
Yeah, but you could get around and find a bathroom in a restaurant.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was pretty easy.
What are your comedic influences?
When I think back to when I was young, believe it or not, it was, the first one that comes to mind at least, is George Carlin.
Hmm.
And I remember my mom and dad buying the LP of George Carlin, one of his famous stand-up sets, where here are the seven things you can't say.
Yeah, yeah.
And I won't say them, but everybody who has heard that hopefully is smiling a little bit, because that was just like classic stuff. And my friends would come over after school and be like, we're going to put this on, listen to this. And that was just hysterical. And then, of course, Eddie Murphy,
Raw.
When he did Raw, that kind of blew everybody's mind. That was so funny to me. And, you know, his days on SNL, I thought that was hilarious too. And then I guess if we move forward, it was Will Ferrell. That was around the same time Jim Carrey was doing Dumb and Dumber. This is like, I think that came out in 94 and I was in college then. So those guys both were huge influences for me.
Now, if you could snap your fingers right now and just design the career of your dreams, what would that look like?
The career of my dreams would be part of an ensemble cast on a sitcom.
Like The Office?
Yeah, like The Office, yeah. Something really dry like that. Or, you know, even at one point, maybe something like Friends, you know, where they're talking about the relationships and, you know, this didn't work out. I had a bad date. I had a good date. You know, getting through life, navigating your way. That was very relatable when that came out. Again, I was in college at the time, and I remember this was before anyone had DVRs. You know, we would all have to scurry over there.
Yeah, friends parties, absolutely.
Yeah, we had friends parties, right. And that was like the big talk the next day about what happened in the episode that previous night.
You've done a ton of commercials, and you're always hilarious in your commercials.
Thank you.
I just saw your recent Domino's one. It's really funny.
Yeah, I'm sure listen to that for any of the listeners who'd like to see that. Just make sure you're wearing your sunglasses when you look.
Do you remember the first movie you ever saw in your life?
I kind of do. I'm going to tell you what it is. Okay. I was 4 years old, and my parents took me to Star Wars.
I am not joking. That was my first movie.
Get the hell out of here.
No, it's my house.
Okay. I went to the theater. They bought three tickets. This was in Michigan at the time. And they said I stood in the aisle the entire movie. And so I guess that was a sign of good things to come for my love for sci-fi and the Star Wars, I was going to say trilogy, but now a family of movies where there's like 17 of them now.
But and 26 more in the pipeline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So for me, Star Wars was my first movie in the theater. And my second movie was Saturday Night Fever.
Like no a few way. Months later.
Yeah. So it was like May of 77, I think is when Star Wars came out. And then I think it was November, December, or whatever, later in the year when
okay.
Saturday Night Fever. So I got sci-fi and then I got like disco dancing.
Those oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I got, and I remember leaving the theater after Saturday Night Fever and just like being so blown away by
yeah.
music and dancing and lights and everything. Yeah. It was so cool.
The dance floor. I mean, Travolta could, I mean, that guy could move his ass, yeah. man. He was a great dancer.
Yeah.
I saw.
And the music was so awesome back then. That's great 70s music in that soundtrack.
Still the best selling musical soundtrack for a movie of all time.
The Bee Gees, man.
Bee Gees did most of it.
And do you know they were like, I don't know if they still are, but they were the number one selling adult contemporary artist, like, ever. I think them and Barry Manilow were the two
completely
like,
buying that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what people don't realize is they wrote so many songs that other people covered, mm-hmm. but it was the Bee Gees who wrote them.
This might seem like a silly question, but how do you feel when you're acting?
Oh, no, it's not silly at all. Acting is absolutely the best high I've ever had in mm-hmm. my life. I mean, it's up there when, you know, the moment my daughter was born, you know, or the way I felt on the day of my wedding, you know. It's just such an adrenaline rush, such an intense amount of endorphins that are released when you.
And is that true for you, no matter whether you're doing a commercial or a film or television, no matter what the medium?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless it's like a really uncomfortable, awkward shoot or the director's being a jerk or, you know, the people I'm working with, the other actors are having a bad day. For the most part, it's so much fun. And you get off that set and you just feel like energized, like, okay. What am I going to do next? All right, I got to go, you know, send this out or do this, and I'm going to book this. And so always coming off a shoot, you just feel like kind of unstoppable.
Well, and I wanted to piggyback on that and say that people tell these stories about, oh, God, I heard the story about this director who's a jerk or this set was really bad or whatever. But I want the public to know that as actors, the vast majority of the work you do mm-hmm. is really great.
Yeah.
And it's those shitty stories are few and far between. It's not like this happens all the time. Like there are some shitty stories, but the majority of the work in the business is fun and it is really cool to do, you know?
Without question. Yeah. I would say 90%, if not, you know, a little bit more of what I've done have been like great shoots, you know, probably closer to 95. Occasionally you'll have one, there'll be, you know, they can't get a rig right for a stunt, you know, and it's making them fall behind. But in the end, it always kind of works out.
Yeah. Yeah. On the podcast, obviously, we talk a lot about traveling in the sense of traveling around the world and going places. But I wanted to talk with you about, because I've met your daughter and she's awesome. And I wanted to talk about the journey of traveling through parenthood, because I think that's a very important one. Obviously, we all have parents. What's that been like for you going from making that journey from single guy to married guy to father?
Well, going from single guy to a committed relationship to married guy, that was definitely a little more familiar. That felt like what naturally was going to happen as I got older and eventually met someone and we had, you know, mutual feelings towards each other and like, okay, yeah, this feels right. Okay. But everything really changes, yeah, when you have a kid. And what's so trippy is I remember when my wife was pregnant with our daughter and she was pretty close to having her. And we said, well, let's get out of here tonight. Let's go see a movie, maybe the last one we see. And we ended up seeing Avatar. And it was great in 3D. And about a week later, my daughter was born. And then it's like, oh my gosh, we'll never go to the movies again. It just seems so impossible to do that. And it's so wild how, you know, one week you can do whatever you want still pretty much, even if your wife's a little tired. And then the next week, you're just completely focused on keeping this thing alive. And so it was amazing those first few weeks trying to find my bearings and just do everything I could to make sure that, you know, she was fed, she was changed, got enough sleep. And I'll tell you what, I quickly understood why, you know, people will capture their enemies and sleep deprive them, because you really do start to lose your mind.
Yeah.
You start to hallucinate. And it happened a few times. One night, Hallie had been up most of the night trying to feed our daughter. Hallie's my wife. Phoebe's our daughter. And so I took her and I was just trying to get Phoebe to go to sleep. She's on my chest. It was like 3:30 in the morning. I had an infomercial on for a nonstick pan or something. And I just remember waking up and thinking that people were around me. And I was like, oh my God, I'm starting to lose my mind. And that's when it all occurred. Like, oh, exactly. That's why the FBI does this to people they capture. So, yeah, trying to get your bearings and just getting through that first few months, that was really tough. You know, the other thing you realize, Daniel, is how much time you wasted before you had a kid. Oh man, you had time. I'm going to take a 25-minute shower. I'm going to make a sandwich, take my sweet-ass time, make a sandwich. When you have a kid, it's like, okay, she's asleep. Get in the shower. You got 6 minutes. Get in a 2-in-1 shampoo conditioner because I don't have time to do both. So it was just incredible how much time I had been wasting. And not really, you know what I mean? I'm being tongue-in-cheek. I wasn't really wasting time, but how your schedule is just really compressed because It's all revolving around this new baby. And like I said, keeping them alive.
And for your daughter, how long was the period of time where it was like that until things settled into a routine where you could claim a little time back for yourself and things like that?
Yeah, it was about 3 months. She started to, the big thing you hear from parents, I'm sure you've heard this before from people, is once they sleep through the night. And once they start doing that, and babies sleep their ass off, they sleep for like 12, 14 hours. Then you're like, oh God, we have a little bit of our life back. Once they went down, you could relax, you could catch up on some emails, we could watch a little TV, maybe cook something, and they sleep pretty soundly, and then have a normal night's sleep, hopefully, and then all of a sudden you have kind of half your day to do what you need to do.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
But getting to that point, that's rough.
Now, she's how old now?
She's going to be 8 next month.
That's awesome.
In fact, Phoebe is a leapling, which means she was born February 29th, so this will be her second ever real birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, so she had one when she was 4, and this will be her second one.
So now how do you celebrate that on the years that are not leap years?
We just do the 28th.
That's cool.
Yeah, we just do February 28th.
Like, sorry you don't get a birthday this year, kid.
Yeah, sorry, just got to wait.
But I'll give you 4 times the amount of presents on your next birthday.
And don't give her that idea, please.
So when you look back on your last 8 years as a father, and then you look back on your own life and your own childhood, do you make comparisons between the two?
Of course. I can't help but do that quite a bit, because in Vermont, we were really lucky. We lived on about 6 acres of land. The nearest neighbors were, you know, several hundred yards away. And we could just kind of do whatever we wanted in terms of, you know, making noise, going outside and playing ball. We live in an apartment building now. We can't play on the roof because there's other people who live on the 3rd floor. And there's no place to go for a lawn or a yard, so you have to go to a park. And then you have to share it with other people, and that's okay. But it's different.
It is different,
in terms of the sensation of just going out in your own front or backyard and, like I said, playing ball.
I had the same thing growing up in Ohio.
You did, yeah.
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
I figured. So it's been like a little bit of a challenge getting to know people, whereas Vermont, it just felt a little bit more effortless. It kind of came to you. Here, you have to seek it out a little bit more.
Jolene and I talk about the fact that LA is such a melting pot that it's really a city somewhat built on anonymity. And where we grew up in Ohio and Missouri, you know, you had this sense of community in that you didn't want to piss off your neighbor and say something snarky because chances are their dad is the one who's fixing your car. Or, you know, that you see a guy in the street and you honk your horn at him. Well, you might be going out with their daughter at some point down the road. Like, didn't
exactly.
You beep your horn at me, son? Yeah, you know. Yeah. So there's a little more sense of responsibility to your community in these smaller towns, where as in LA, there's, you know, whatever, 10 million, 20 million people. You beep your horn at somebody, who cares? You know,
you'll never see them again.
Yeah.
And that's a really good example that you gave, because, yeah, you really do. If you didn't know them, your parents knew them.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, you would learn pretty quickly, like, you know, to be mindful about like these type of encounters, especially as you got a little bit older and stuff, just to kind of be aware. We are a small town. We all do know each other. and let's just kind of play nice. And out here, perfect example like you gave, it's different. It's the city. Even though it's a spread out city, it's still a city with a lot of people, and it just takes a little more time to carve out your niche.
What are some of the most important things to you as a dad?
For me, it's always being there for my daughter whenever she needs me, and to be a role model for her as best I can. I only have my own childhood to compare it to. And thank God I had such a wonderful childhood with both of my parents who were just absolutely spectacular.
I've met your parents and they are awesome people.
Thank you very much. They are awesome and I am lucky. As my dad has said many times, you know, we don't get to choose our parents or our siblings, you know, only our spouse and our friends. So in terms of the parent lottery, I got really lucky.
Me too.
Yeah, you did. I know you really love your mom and dad. And so you take the things you've learned and you put it into your kid.
Is there anything that you feel like, and I know your parents are awesome, but is there anything you feel like, I want to do this differently than I had or that I experienced?
I'm sure if I thought a little bit longer, I mean, well, okay, for example, there was a year where my parents were separated. Obviously, I want to avoid that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get separated or certainly divorced. I remember how hard that was for me, and I'm sure it was very difficult for them as well, but they've expressed in, you know, many years since how much they regret having to put me through that as their only kid. And so I never want to get to that place with my wife where, sorry, Phoebe, your mom and I aren't getting along. We have to, you know, separate.
Yeah.
So being communicative and open and honest, I know it all sounds like cliched words, but they're really true.
No, it really is true. Joe and I both come from families of divorce, you know, and mm-hmm. we both vowed at the very beginning that whether we made it, quote unquote, as a couple or not through time, the one thing we both agreed to was 100% honest, tell each other everything, and just keep talking. No matter what. And we have for 14 years, you know, yeah. We've been talking to each other. So.
Yeah, you guys have been together a long time, and that's really...
Well, you guys have been together a long time, too.
We have, yeah. This year will be our 10-year anniversary.
That's awesome. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to take her out to a nice dinner or something.
Yeah.
Anything you wanted, Baja Fresh.
Damien, what is the hardest part of being a parent?
I'd say the hardest part is, at least with a kid this age, is the occasional mood swings. And, you know, from what I hear from parents who have kids who are older, yeah, it's going to get tougher, especially once, you know, we hit the old junior high puberty. So there are times where she just is kind of nuts. And, you know, for me, I'm trying to understand, okay, you know, it's different too because I was worried when I initially became a dad that I wouldn't be able to relate to her because I'm a guy, you know, and I only know how it was like being a little boy. And so I was like, damn, I can't play, you know, football with her or G.I. Joe. What am I going to do? But it all worked itself out. But there are times where her mom seems to be the better soothing mechanism than her dad. And thank God for that. So she kind of tunes into her a little bit better. But then sometimes, too, I'll see them kind of having this mother-daughter thing where they're maybe a little snippy and I can come in and give a different energy.
Hmm.
So
there's a nice balance there.
It's a balance. Yeah, it really is. But look, there's times where, like I said, she'll just be kind of crazy and have her put her foot down and you gotta work through it.
Yeah.
And she, you know, what's really great is she has a very short memory. So she doesn't hold a grudge. And, you know, when we get to be our age, people hold grudges and it's too bad. But kids, you can learn a lot from a kid because they're almost like a defensive back on football. You have to forget. If you just got burned for a long touchdown pass, you have to forget about it because you're going out 5 minutes later for the next series. Mm. And so kids are like that. You just have to kind of forget about it. And she does. And just get back to enjoying each other.
So Damien, you have this awesome kid show called Silly Billy Toys on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
Why don't you take this opportunity to tell the listeners about it for their kids?
Okay.
And tell us how you decided to create it.
So Silly Billy Toys is something I created a few years ago because I wanted to put my own version of what I thought was good children's content out there. When I started to watch some videos with Phoebe, we'd watch Sesame Street, maybe an old Electric Company clip, you know, stuff from our day that I can relate to. But a lot
1 Contact, remember that show?
Oh, there you go. I used to love that show. And I was starting to poke around, and a lot of it was really bad. And a lot of it, too, unfortunately, was really inappropriate. And so what may start out as a really good video, or at least a decent video, kind of spiraled into like, this is getting kind of weird. So I wanted to take my experience as an actor, as a writer, a comedian, and now as a parent, and make something that could really be fun for a younger age, call it 3 to 9, that parents could watch and feel safe about, you know, walking away and cooking some dinner, or, you know, taking a shower, and they weren't going to come back and there's going to be swearing or something like that.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, I started Silly Billy Toys, and what's funny is I started doing them alone initially, and I might do the alphabet or unboxing some toys. But when Phoebe became aware of what I was doing, I'll never forget what she said to me one day. She goes, "Dad, you make these?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Okay, you are never allowed to do one of these without me again." And from then on, I was kind of like, yeah, of course. Now that you're ready and you're interested, I'd love to do them with you. And so we've done one together ever since.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's been really, really fun.
And how many episodes in are you now?
So I've probably done close to 50 episodes.
That's awesome.
They're not all posted on Amazon Prime yet, but there's almost 25 up there on Prime, and that's where I encourage most of our viewers to go and watch them. They seem to have the best viewing experience there.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. How long does it take you to create an episode?
Far too long. I had to teach myself how to edit. For me, you know, I'll write one. I'll shoot it in an afternoon with Phoebe. She does great. When she gets tired, I bribe her with candy to keep her energy levels up. We finish up an episode, and that's when everything comes to a screeching halt. So my episodes are typically, you know, 6-8 minutes.
Well, let me ask you this. What is your goal for Silly Billy Toys going forward?
Well, I'd like to continue to grow the channel, you know, and bring about more viewership to it and have people interact by, you know, when they go to Amazon Prime and watch the episodes there, you know, they can leave a comment, just like if you were buying something from Amazon, you know, and get feedback from the viewers and whatnot, and see if they have episode ideas. I just really want to keep diversifying the types of episodes that we do. One thing I do with Silly Billy Toys is I try not to do the same episode twice.
And so parents out there, Silly Billy Toys on Amazon Prime, please check it out. Give Damien a great rating if you like it. And if you want to make some suggestions for future episodes, feel free to make comments on there as well.
Yes, thank you very much.
Damien, what's something that you would give up in your life to become an even better actor than you are now, if that's even possible?
It's really not possible, is it? Oh, wait, it's totally possible. Neapolitan ice cream? Is that fair?
Sure. No more Neapolitan ice cream, but an Academy Award.
I really like that, but I would do that for an Oscar. What would I give up in my life? I don't know. I'm really lucky, Daniel. I have a really great life. You know, I would love it if my acting career was, you know, the one, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, of a guy who's a series regular on a network sitcom. But I haven't given up on that day not becoming a reality, potentially. But in the meantime, I get to do what I love. I get to work with my daughter,
that's,
you know, a
so
couple times
fantastic.
A month.
Yeah.
She still loves it. She's not at the age yet where she's like, "Dad, no, I don't want to. It's boring, stupid. You're weird." You know, I'm still kind of her hero a little bit. I get to
well,
work.
Well, dude, come on. You're always going to be your hero no matter what.
Yeah, maybe in some respects, even if, you know, I annoy her, but I'm a lucky guy. I really am. So I'm doing what I love. You know, it's a tough business, as you can attest to. You understand how it works, and you never know what one year will bring. But I'm optimistic here at the beginning of a new year, and hope it's the best year ever for both of us.
Agreed. Thank you. If you could tell your younger self anything, any piece of advice, and you could look back at like 12-year-old or 17-year-old Damien or whatever, what would you tell yourself?
Okay, I'll tell you exactly what I would tell my younger self. Buy a piece of real estate when you first move out here, because everything's so goddamn expensive, you will never own a home in LA. Do whatever you have to do to
invest,
get a little...
in Apple in 1980.
Buy Apple stock and Amazon stock. Don't ever look back, and don't freaking sell it. Yeah, I think that would definitely be a piece of advice, because I would love to own a house out here, but it's very expensive. But, you know, I wouldn't second guess the life that I've lived. I wouldn't want to change anything. as somebody once said, you know, this is exactly the way it's supposed to be. And so I try not to mess with that too much. All I can do is kind of move forward. And if you're smart, you'll learn from your past transgressions and, you know, make the next year a better year.
Very well said. If you were going to give advice to people out there listening to the podcast who maybe haven't traveled as much in their life and they're thinking about traveling, what's something you would tell them? What travel advice would you give people?
One piece of advice I would give anyone who's younger and maybe starting off in their career is travel as much as you can. Because when I moved out here, I made the mistake of probably being too caught up in worrying about money. And I regret some of the weddings I missed, some of the travel opportunities I missed, because I was being too much of a kind of nervous Nelly about my financial situation. And you have time to recover. And certainly in my 20s, you know, now that I'm in my 40s, I would have recovered. It wouldn't have broken me. But at the time I thought, oh, I can't do it. I'll never be able to, you know, go to Florida and back for my friend's wedding. And now I wish I had done that and that I had taken a couple of opportunities to travel outside the country as well. So travel as much as you can, see other people, see other cities. There's nothing like it. You realize that there is so much to learn and absorb and connect with on this planet, not just where you grew up.
And it's a very age-old piece of advice or a saying, but when you are on your deathbed, you don't look back and regret most of the things you've done. You regret the things you didn't do.
Well said. Yeah. Exactly. You don't look back and say, oh, I wish I hadn't bought that Buick in 83. You say, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I bought that and I went there and I got to be with these people and have them in my life. And really, that's what makes the world go around, is the people in your life and the things you get to do and experience with them. That's the gold.
What's your whoopee when you travel? Is there an item you take with you that no matter what you always have with you?
You mean as an adult or as a kid?
As an adult. Do you have something you take with you always when you travel?
No. Now my whoopee is my wife and daughter.
Nice. So they're living whoopees.
Yeah. So they're the real deal, and they'll jump in and, you know, cuddle with me in the morning and stuff. And, you know, that's the best. But growing up, I had a special blankie that my grandma on the maternal side, I hope that wasn't too confusing, made for me. And I had that, I think, up until high school.
It was funny
is when I got it when I was a baby, you know, they wrapped it around me 17 times like a burrito. And then as I grew to 6 feet tall, it just covered like my torso. It kind of filled in the cracks.
So where is this blanket now?
So it's at my mom and dad's house, I think in a air sealed, you know, plastic bag. And at one point I will pass that along to my daughter, and if she chooses to have kids one day, she can give it to her kids.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. One of the last things we're going to do is my game called 299 Philosophical and Life Questions with Moonbird.
Okay.
And I have every guest pick two numbers between 1 and 299, and I'm going to read you those two questions randomly, and hopefully you'll choose to answer them. So what are your two numbers, Damien?
Okay, I'm going to go for 7 and 13.
7, what is something you're not good at?
Something I'm not good at? I'm not always good at being patient. Yeah.
Well, as my father would say, and I talked about on the last podcast of last season, you don't own the patent on that.
That's right. Yeah. well said. Yeah. I could learn to be a little more patient. And I think sometimes with, again, the industry that we're in, you want things to happen right away. You put in all this work. You're like, well, where's my results?
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't happen on your timeline. It happens on
the universe's timeline.
The universe's timeline. Well said. And so I continue to work on becoming more patient with that.
Okay, number 13, how do you define success?
I define success as the people and relationships that you have in your life and the closeness that you have with those people and the places you may go and travel with those people. I mean, sharing those experiences with people you care about and love, that's really, for me, the best part of life.
I totally agree. Well, Damien, one last question. What's your spirit animal?
My spirit animal is a well-toned caterpillar.
Now, why?
Because they like to nap, but they're friendly. They're not too fast, but they're real approachable. I don't know. I just made that up. I have no idea what my spirit animal is. I would probably say a wolf, because we had those in Vermont, and I was always kind of in awe of wolves and how they move together in packs, which kind of piggybacks on
family
some of my previous answers about the people in your life and the people you keep close.
Yeah.
And plus, we had a dog growing up who was just the best dog in the world. We adopted her, and we found out that she was part wolf. So she used to howl and walk kind of like in a single file, like with her paws like wolves did. And she was the best. So, yeah. Caterpillar/wolf.
Okay, Caterpillar Wolf, thank you for coming in and being here as always and for being funny, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Dan. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad that we've become friends over the years.
Me too.
Thank you for thinking of me.
Have a great day.
You too.
Friends and listeners, if you have young ones, you can find Damien's show Silly Billy Toys on Amazon Prime. Until next time, if you want more Moonbird in your life, and hey, come on, who wouldn't? Head on over to memoriesofamoonbird.com or visit me on social media at memoriesofamoonbird. Here comes the downbeat.